Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Gianni Battici.
And I'm Sam from FPL Family.
Hey, Sam. We still have one match to go. It's Chelsea versus Spurs. It's Gianni versus Sam. But the first 10 games of the week have thrown up a number of huge talking points, haven't they? I mean, we saw Haaland come off the bench to score. We saw Foden miss out through illness. We saw Salah and Darwin. Well, they were sold en masse, but both found themselves on the bench by Klopp. And we had a couple of goalkeeper injuries, Martinez and Edison. But how was game week 35 for you, Sam?
Oh, do you know, Johnny, I was getting myself in a bit of a state going into this one because a lot of the community had their wildcards active and I had a bit of a moment of kind of like, oh, I wish I still had my wildcard because it's so fun, isn't it, playing your wildcard, and there's this whole wave of expectations and things that might happen when you've played it and it could be great. And I was looking at my team thinking, well, I don't really want Salah anymore and I don't really want Darwin anymore because the form hasn't been there. And the double has passed now for Liverpool and, you know, some trickier fixtures on the horizon. So I wanted to change them up. So I ended up taking a -8 heading into game week 35, which is something that I never do. And of course, Gianni, it's one of those, isn't it, where part of the decision for the -8 was to bring in Isak, who I really wanted. And that obviously went incredibly well. We'll talk about him later. But the other two parts of that -8 have failed dramatically because one of them was to bring in Foden, who obviously then was ill and missed out in the week. Although I did get very jammy and get Saka off the bench in replacement for Foden. I did. So, you know, that's my Spurs bias coming in, I guess, that I'd bench Saka. I really struggled with who to bench this week. And in the end, plumped for Saka, which was a terrible decision when I'm sat in the Spurs stadium 3-0 down to Arsenal thinking, why on earth have I benched Saka? But he did come on in replacement for Foden, so it's nice to get those 12 points off the bench. And then the other decision I made based upon last week was I really needed Livramento last week. I had 9 players last week. I really needed Livramento to come off the bench and get me something. Just a point, that's all I wanted. And he didn't. So this week I thought, heading into bench boost in 37, probably need to change up my Newcastle defender. So sold Livramento for Fabian Scher, only to then find that Livramento started anyway and Shaw went off injured. So all of that sounds like it was a tale of woe. Actually, it hasn't been. I've had a really good week. I'm on a nice green arrow because I had players that most people had sold on their wildcards, like Saka. Mm. The only frustration for me so far, apart from the Livramento and Shaw transfer, which ended up costing me more than the 4 points because obviously Livramento outscored him, was the fact that I benched Pickford this week for Petrovic because you kind of have to play your double game week goalkeeper. So having him on the bench hasn't filled me with confidence, but I did captain Son. And so far in the battle between Son and Palmer, Son is winning out. It'll be interesting to see what's happening on Thursday.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, Son got his points late with that penalty and Palmer could have had his points late. He had that brilliant chance late on. You expect he did all the hard work and then it's one-on-one with the keeper and he doesn't find it past the keeper's legs. But Palmer versus Son, as always, captaincy is a huge part to this game. So we'll talk more about maybe that later. But should we kick off with that London derby you're at? Tottenham versus Arsenal. You mentioned benching Saka there, who was brilliant in that first half an hour. Why is it when you told me about getting some bench jam Saka off the points, as a fellow FPL manager, I just can't be happy for you? Straight away, I'm like, oh, there's something about bench jam that no other FPL manager welcomes, whether it's for their mates or not. You're like, oh, you just resent it. Because everyone wants it. There's nothing more frustrating than getting bench points. So often we see it and we don't see the auto sub. Then when you hear of those auto sub stories, you just go, oh man, that's so jammy.
Honestly,
so well played.
But it was incredibly jammy because, so I was looking at my front eight for this week with Foden, Gordon, Son, Palmer, Mateta on the back of his 4 goals and assists last week, Haaland and Isak, and then Saka, and thinking, who on earth do I bench here? Because I can't bench either of the two Newcastle guys at home because we know what Newcastle are like at home. I don't want to bench Mateta based upon what we've just seen from him and him being an absolute hero for me in game week 34. And in the end, I thought, I'm going to bench Saka and I'm not going to like it. And I hated every minute of it. But I benched him on the basis that I thought maybe Haaland might not be available because we weren't really sure what that was looking like in terms of his recovery from the injury that kept him out in midweek. So I kind of thought, well, I'll bench Saka, put him first sub, and then maybe he's going to come off the bench. And honestly, I'm sitting there and I'm watching the Spurs game play out. And it gets to halftime and I turned to my mum, who I was there with, and I was like, She was like, I don't think it could get any worse than this. I was like, yeah, it can. I've got Saka on my FPL bench alongside Gabriel and Saliba. I benched all three of my Arsenal players. Now, the decision to bench Saliba and Gabriel actually in the end went fine. It didn't look like it was going to at halftime, but in the end it did. But I do feel incredibly jammy to have got Saka off the bench. I'm not going to sit here and say it was good FPL management because, I mean, I suppose it was good FPL management to have him first sub.
Yeah, because so many sold Saka. Like, I'm someone that sold Saka on wildcard. And if you did wildcard ahead of this game week 35, there's a very good chance you were one of the Saka sellers because to fit in all those luxury players in the midfield that we've just spoken about, something had to give. And Arsenal, of course, don't have a double in 37. And if you're looking at the players everyone's been buying of late, it's all those with either, it's either Chelsea or Spurs players because they double-double or all those that double in 37. So we're beelining for the likes of, you know, Man United or Newcastle players. So Saka made way and I sold Havertz and Saka. Both came up big.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And you know, it was great to get their points last time out in 34, which was a high-scoring week. But both Havertz and Saka have Bournemouth next now. And they've got Man United in 37 when other teams double. Well, I see goals in that. And then they've got a good fixture in the last day of the season. So, you know, still very good owns, clearly. And sometimes, we say it every season, we get a little bit of tunnel vision for those double game week assets, don't we?
Definitely. I mean, you talk about selling Saka, you definitely weren't alone. 521,000 managers sold Saka heading into this week. And I think, like you say, that was in part due to the fact that it was no doubles left for Arsenal. It was in part due to the fact that people wanted all of these other assets, you know, the Fodens, the Anthony Gordons, the Palmers, the Sons, all of these players that have the double game week to come in game week 37. Bruno Fernandes, of course, being really popular as well with managers on wildcard. So I totally get it. I totally get why you would sell Saka and Havertz. But having sat there and watched them, I mean, for the first 15 minutes of that game, it was the best Spurs performance that I'd seen potentially all season. Yeah. We came out, we were really, really good for those 15 minutes. And for whatever reason, Spurs and their ability to defend from a set piece is just terrible, which, you know, heading into next week actually looks really good if you own Trent Alexander-Arnold or somebody like that from Liverpool, even Van Dijk from his set piece threat, because they are so bad at defending from set pieces. You know, they had two in the game and Arsenal scored from both of them. It was just one of those performances defensively. Having said all of that, I did think going in at halftime we were a bit unlucky to be 3-0 down because Van de Ven had obviously had one ruled out for offside, but it was very tight, that decision. There were a number of occasions where Spurs had got through. Like there was one for Son where he just skied it. I think it hit Rosette. And I watched it because from the other end of the stadium and I was like, what is going on with you? Because he was so out of the game for the majority of it. And it was only really at the end of the game on 60-ish minutes when Postecoglou took off James Maddison, moved Kulusevski into that number 10, who, by the way, Kulusevski was, in my opinion, the best Spurs player on the pitch.
I thought so. Even in the first half out on the right, I thought he was brilliant. Kulu.
He was. He was really good. Maybe fatherhood. He was became a dad at the weekend. So maybe his fatherhood, you know, encouraged him to...
He had the baby celebration that he couldn't use.
I know, right?
Yeah, I bet he was ready for the baby celebration.
I reckon so. On Thursday night, you'll see that at Stamford Bridge.
I hope not.
I hope so. But I think... Yeah, for me, he was the best player. And then when we moved him into the number 10, he continued to look good. It also meant that because obviously Johnson had come on to replace Werner, who got injured on 31 minutes. Johnson then moved out onto the side that he prefers to play, put him on the right. He was much more effective down that side. And it allowed Son to go out on the left where he suddenly started to flourish. And we started to see bits of Son that I really have missed in the last few weeks when he's been playing in that number 9 because he's just not been so comfortable in front of goal in the last few weeks. But seeing Richarlison come back, I think is huge for Spurs. And from FPL perspective, obviously you can't do anything ahead of the game against Chelsea on Thursday evening, but with Werner looking like he's going to be out of that one probably because he goes off on 31 and it was a very quick decision to bring him off. It was one of those like he just goes down and the next thing you know he's being subbed and it was kind of like okay, no real attempt to even continue with the game. I always worry a little bit when that happens to players. So yeah, we'll see. I think that probably makes Richarlison a really, really nice option again heading forward with Spurs if you are thinking about how you are investing money, if you want to take some money back out of that midfield to enable you to get back to an Arsenal midfielder, which some managers might be wanting to do now.
Yeah, watching that going, you know, why did I sell both of them? Forget the doubles. Is it worth looking at bringing one back in? I don't think I will, but I can completely understand why those that will look at that. Okay, let's move. Should we look at this? If we've spoken Arsenal title challenge, it's so there for them, but they can't afford to drop a single point. And obviously they're relying on Man City slipping up, which doesn't look like it's going to happen. But when you watch that first half of Man City versus Forest, it very easily could have happened in terms of a slip up, because I thought City were a little bit fortunate, certainly not to concede. I mean, we saw a fair few chances for Forest. Chris Wood guilty of missing a few big ones. I guess the headlines from the game, other than those chances missed from Forest, were Haaland back fit. Great. Good to know. Foden missed the match through illness, but you would think through illness. We saw Palmer missing a match through illness a couple of games ago and then back. So likely Foden not out too long and back next time out. But also we saw the Ederson injury. Mm. I bought Ederson in on wildcard.
Oh no.
With 37 in mind. And now I'm going to have to sell him, I think, in 36. It doesn't look good. We saw post-match pictures of him in a sling. I think Pep was quoted saying it doesn't sound or look great. Ortega can obviously come in, and with that is an opportunity to save some money, because you're selling Ederson, who's 5 million plus, and you're potentially replacing him with the new Man City number one in Ortega, who's 3.7 million. So I guess every cloud has a silver lining there if I do make the move.
Yeah, Ederson bought him by over 167,000 managers last week, and only Petrovic of the goalkeepers actually have more new managers heading into this one than Ederson did. And honestly, Gianni, I think he was a really good buy. Like I sat on the fantasy show last week and we spoke about Ederson, and I was looking at him thinking, sometimes it's quite hard, isn't it, with the defenders to work out where you go, particularly when there were good options from some of the teams, but also some terrible kind of fixtures coming up for some teams that you maybe want to be investing in. And it was quite difficult, I think, with the defenders to work out where you would go. But Ederson felt like a really nice opportunity to invest in a player that you didn't have to necessarily play every week if you didn't want to. But, you know, when you're talking about the Man City goalkeeper, you probably are talking about playing them every week. But also, like you say, have them in that double in game week 37, which feels like a great opportunity. Now, it does still feel to me like a good opportunity. Ortega, I thought, did well when he came on. He's a really good understudy. Like, it's not going to weaken Manchester City defensively having Ortega there instead of Ederson. But I think from an FPL perspective, it's just a frustration, isn't it? If you've bought in Ederson this week, I mean, I guess the thing is you don't have to make that transfer straight away because you will have another goalkeeper having just wildcarded. And it's not like you're going to have a non-playing goalkeeper in your second goalie slot. So you potentially can afford to wait a week and do it ahead of game week 37 if you wanted to. And that might give us a bit more understanding about Ederson. But like you say, seeing him in a sling and hearing Pep saying that it doesn't look good after the game makes you think that we potentially might not see him again. And therefore at 3.7, Ortega feeling like a really nice cheap route into the Manchester City defence.
Yeah, it's a hard one for me. I thought if I do go without Ederson, I could replace him with a non-Man City player, which then allows for Kevin De Bruyne on a Man City triple attack. I've got Haaland and Foden already. And it was De Bruyne, my biggest headache on wildcard. It was Bruno or De Bruyne, and I went Bruno. But having watched De Bruyne against Forest again, he's just so effective in picking up creative points through assists and through bonus points. And again, we saw that. A couple of assists, always does well in the bonus points, De Bruyne, whether he's returning or not. And I'm watching that game thinking, oh, De Bruyne in double game week 37, if you're looking for a differential, if you had the funds available, he's a really nice option. I guess we should talk a little bit about Forest, because they were good value. So unfortunate for them, again, not picking up any points. But what did you make of Chris Wood? Because he's been so, so effective under the new manager, under Nuno. He's been so clinical in front of goal. He's been the perfect number nine, pretty much hitting the target every time. I think he's had a shot success rate of over sort of 35% in terms of scoring. But Chris Wood was poor. He missed a couple of sitters, didn't he? I think his XG was 0.94 in that game.
Yeah, it was the top XG underperformer of the game week for Chris Wood this week. And it was one of those weeks, wasn't it, for him, where you just thought that nothing was quite going to go right for him. But Nottingham Forest, I mean, at the end of that first half, if you'd have said to me Nottingham Forest are winning this game 1-0, that would have been a reasonable reflection on the game. Nottingham Forest were good. They could easily have taken their chances. It's just that they didn't in this one. Morgan Gibbs-White's also been outstanding in recent weeks. So in the six prior to this one, he'd had 16 goal scoring opportunities in the last six matches, which, you know, is really excellent given where we were with Nottingham Forest a few months ago before the arrival of Nuno. And in that time, he's had five big chances as well, picking up three assists. Now, in this one, he added a further chance created against Manchester City on Sunday. So that's 17 now in seven for him. And only eight players have been more creative in that period of time than Morgan Gibbs-White has. So wow. I think, you know, most managers, and it's the same all the time, isn't it? Like, when you get to this point of the season and you've got three game weeks left to go and one of them is a double game week, and a double game week that contains doubles for teams like Manchester City, Spurs, Newcastle, Chelsea, Manchester United, the chances are that that is going to be your tunnel focus, because the potential for them to go massive is there. But then there are teams like Nottingham Forest who are doing their business really, really nicely. And I know that they lost in this one, but they certainly didn't lose badly. And they could have and maybe should have got something out of this game. It's just Man City, they are such a well-oiled machine, aren't they? They know exactly how to get what they need out of the game. And I take what you say about Kevin De Bruyne. He's a phenomenal asset. But I don't think he's quite as good when Foden is on the pitch. And that's what kind of put me off the double up of the two midfielders, because you never really know where they're going to play, how they're going to play together. If Haaland's there, what impact that's going to have on their positioning on the pitch. So I find it quite difficult with KDB and with Foden. And earlier on this season, so this is the first time I've owned Phil Foden and he was ill for it. Because earlier on in the season, I had the straight choice between Foden and De Bruyne. And it was when De Bruyne was just coming back from his injury and he came on and he was phenomenal in that last 20 minutes. And
yeah, he scored a couple, didn't he?
That's right. Yeah. And Foden was much more heavily owned, of course, because KDB had been out injured. And I was like, right, here's an opportunity. Here's an opportunity to go for Kevin, who is a tried and tested FPL asset. He's coming back from injury, looks like a really nice option. And Foden just bit me every single week. It was just one decision after another, after another, after another. And so this time I was like, I have to have Foden. And I didn't expect him, I don't think any of us did, to miss this one, because, you know, he was fully fit and firing on Thursday evening when we watched him play against Brighton. And with an illness, obviously we would expect him to be back for game week 36. So I'm not overly concerned about Foden. I think the question is, do you double up on the middle? Or now that we're starting to see some clean sheets from Manchester City, as we have against Brighton and now against Forest, should we be looking at an Ortega or a Vardiol, who just seems to be on goal-scoring form right now in both the Champions League and in the Premier League, or Walker, who's regularly picking up assist points again now? It's a difficult dilemma, I think, as to how to treble up with City.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind you want three. It's just what three? Because as you say, we haven't always this season gone for their defenders because there's a lack of upside and clean sheets haven't always been guaranteed. We're seeing the clean sheets now. But then when we look at ceiling, that combination of owning triple attack feels so, so fun for the last few game weeks. I'm with you though. Foden and De Bruyne are in the same team. You do lose a little something. I wonder if you lose it more with Foden than De Bruyne. When I watched them both, it kind of feels like, okay, when they're in the team together, Foden is sacrificed out wide and De Bruyne still gets to be the main man. Against Chelsea in the FA Cup semi-final a couple of weeks back, you know, they played both centrally, they played as the two number 10s, which you haven't seen that much. But when they play in that position together, again, everything is going through De Bruyne and it's Foden still who feels sacrificed in terms of time on the ball. I never feel like De Bruyne is sacrificed in any way, shape or form when he's on the pitch. And that's why I think he's such a good asset if you can afford him. Speaking of good assets, Sam, I speak about wildcard and kind of a few things that went wrong. But one thing that went right was the combination of Gordon and Isak.
What a pair.
I mean, especially when they play at home. And a couple of weeks back, they beat Spurs 4-0 at home. And it was those two that combined
Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, I mean, Spurs at home are so good. Then they go away from home and I think they're both blank. And then again, at the weekend, they're at home again against Sheffield United. They don't put four goals on the table this time. They put five. And Gordon and Isak combined for 23 points. It's a common theme at home. These two combine so well and just are so, so consistent. The slight issue with Newcastle now is from the four remaining games, only one of them is at home. They do go away to Burnley, Man United and Brentford, and they've got Brighton at home. So on paper, they're all four are good fixtures, but you just know the points away from home aren't quite as consistent. But Gordon and Isak, I love them both. And we're really worried with Isak, picking him. Anyone that picks Isak goes, oh, will he get injured? Or at some point, will he get reduced minutes because Wilson's around? But at the moment, when you look at his minutes in the last few games, he's just been playing huge sets of 90. I think he's on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 sets of 90 in the last 7 games. Yeah. You cannot complain with that form. And then Gordon, obviously, he's so, so cheap, but also he's got that great incentive for an England call-up this summer. He's got a very good chance of getting it, and he's playing the best football of his career.
It's got to be on the plane for me, Anthony Gordon. Surely. He's playing so well at the moment. Yeah, Gordon and Isak. I've had Gordon for most of the season now. I really enjoy owning him. He is one of those players that you just consistently can rely upon, particularly at St James's. Now, what I've kind of done over the last few weeks and months is just benched him when he's gone away from home, because I'm never really that afraid of benching a massive haul, because the way that he's played away from home hasn't been quite, well, it hasn't been anywhere near the form, as you say, that he's had at home this season. But that's quite nice, because at the moment where we've all sold Salah and other big assets, there isn't so much of a really, really cheap eighth forward player in the game that we can bench every week. You know, in the past, we'd have to have somebody like a Cameron Archer or somebody that, you know, you couldn't necessarily rely on week upon week to get the start. Whereas right now, all eight of our front eight, are going to start every week unless they're ill, like Foden was this time around, and then you're going to need your spare. But Anthony Gordon, for me, is just one of those players that he'd be in my team of the season from an FPL perspective, because I just think he has been phenomenal. Add Isak to that. Since he's come back from injury, he's not blanked at home. He's been just phenomenal. And like you say, this time last year, if you remember, we were all having the, do you go Isak, do you go Wilson? Who's going to get the minutes? Who's going to get the goals? And it was decisive, wasn't it, at the end of the season?
Save my season, that did. I went Wilson.
I did.
And it was a huge call, because Isak was the popular choice, but Wilson got the points.
Yeah, I did exactly the same thing. And when I was bringing in Isak this week, I was thinking to myself, goodness, this is the total reverse of what I did last time around, because I went for Wilson. And he fundamentally changed the outcome of my season, because he was so lowly owned. The boost was there. Now, even with Gordon and Isak, they're still not that highly owned, these two. Yeah. It's phenomenal to me that they aren't. And you are right. In the games that they have left, they only have that one home fixture. And that does make you kind of question, well, is it worth it? But for me, with the form that they're in, it doesn't mean they're not going to return points away from home. It just means they're less likely to haul. That's what we've seen so far. And I don't worry too much about the return of Callum Wilson. I think Eddie Howe will ease him back in massively, because we've seen such problematic injuries for Callum Wilson over the last year or so that rushing him back when you don't need to, because you've got Isak in such good form, just doesn't feel like it's worth it.
Yeah, away from home, I think Gordon's only had that one haul this season, but it was against Sheffield United on the road. He got 12 points. They won 8-0 that day. But so going to a team like Burnley, who will come out and play a bit and there'll be lots of space, maybe we see that again for Gordon, even away from home. Newcastle defence was an interesting choice for those on wildcard, because I think everyone went there. And look, there were some that perhaps didn't go Gordon and Isak, so they could go double Newcastle defence, because, you know, affordable assets in the likes of Cher, Livramento, Dan Byrne, the fixtures are there, and they'd started keeping clean sheets. Didn't keep a clean sheet to Sheffield United, and Cher going off injured. We won't get a huge amount, I don't think, from Eddie Howe on Friday for his press conference, because Eddie Howe is not one of the managers that gives us a huge, huge steer. He'll keep his cards close to his chest on that one. So I think FPL managers like you, Sam, that own share, will probably have a bit of a decision to make. Will he, won't he? I mean, you kind of need him available for 37 if you've got a bench boost still.
Yeah, it's honestly, this is the thing that has annoyed me most about this week, because part of the reason for going share is this 100% appearance record that he's had this season. And last week I really wanted to go for Cher, and I just couldn't afford it. I didn't have the budget, because obviously I had to keep Salah and I had to keep Darwin, and I had real problems last week heading into game week 34, and I was thinking my bench is looking weaker than weak, because I had Son sitting there, I had Gusto, who then was flagged and obviously wasn't expected to start, and I was thinking I don't really have, oh, and I had Lascelles as my other option. So I was like, I've got real problems here, and I'd like a Newcastle defender. But the only way to get a Newcastle defender is really to deal with Lascelles. And at that point, I had the money for Livramento and Livramento alone. And I was like, well, look, Livramento came back on last week. He's not probably going to get 90 minutes. He's probably not going to get the start most weeks. But he will get some points. He'll get some appearance points. So last week when Cole Palmer didn't turn up, when Haaland didn't turn up and I was looking at my team with 11 players and I was thinking, at least Livramento, you know, can you come off the bench? No, he didn't. Stayed there, sat on the bench the whole time. And so I was frustrated with it and was thinking, okay, I need to make some choices about what I do with Livramento now, because what I can't do is hold him through 37, because I no longer have the security of at least there being one or two points for him in that double game week.
Yeah.
So I made the decision to go for Cher, and I did that over Dan Burn. It was a kind of a choice between the two of them. It now looks like it might be problematic. It does seem like it was a tightening of the hamstring as opposed to a full-blown pull, which maybe bodes well. We'll have to see. I mean, if he doesn't play in game week 36, it's not the end of the world to me. Like, I would obviously like to have him play against Burnley, but Burnley have got some grit. Maybe we'll talk about Burnley in a minute. They've got a bit of fight about them at the moment trying to stay in the league. So maybe I'm not so worried about not having him for 36, but I do, as you say, I really need him to be fit for 37, because that bench boost, I can't bench boost an injured player. So having taken a -4 for him this week, if he's then not available for 37, the thought of having to take another -4 to take him back out again is really not ideal.
Yeah, it's painful, but something we always tend to do on bench boost to get those 15 players out. It feels so important that on those weeks. You mentioned Burnley, Sam. They picked up another point against Man United, and they're definitely fighting for their lives there at the bottom of the league. But I mean, Man United clocked 2.71 XG in that game. So when we look at that number alone, you go, okay, Burnley are definitely still, as we know, a defence we can target, which bodes well for those on Newcastle attackers next week. But who impressed me the most? I mean, Anthony got the goal, and Anthony, I know, has had a huge amount of criticism, but when you look at the pure numbers and you look at the stats, no player in the league this weekend had more attempts than Anthony. He clocked 8 attempts. I think Cody Gakpo 8 as well. And then we had a few like Garnacho and Palmer on 6, and then a handful of players on 5 attempts. But Anthony is a greedy option. And in FPL, we historically like greedy players. Now, am I beelining to go and buy Anthony? No, I'm not. But if you are looking for a differential with a double in 37 in midfield, then maybe he becomes a really outside of the box option. You're looking for someone that no one in your mini league has got. I said similar with Madueke at Chelsea last week, like you're going for someone that's really lowly owned, that's actually getting some shots on goal. In a similar way to Madueke, Anthony is clocking the shot and now he's getting the minutes. Maybe he's one to consider. But I mean, Man United still disappoint overall. I guess the headline for many is Bruno is still looking good. And many went Bruno on wildcard, myself included. So I was fairly happy that he still mopped up a couple of bonus points despite not producing an attacking return.
Yeah, it's funny because we were watching Soccer Saturday come through on Saturday afternoon, and Lee was sat there having just wildcarded like yourself and brought in Bruno Fernandes, and also with Harry Maguire in his starting 11. So he was sitting there 1-0 Manchester United thinking, okay, well, nothing for Bruno, but at least Harry Maguire is going to get the clean sheet. And Onana, I think this was probably one of his best performances of the season.
Outstanding.
I was so impressed with him until the 87th minute, where he just had a bit of a moment, didn't he? And so on the TV, when they said, oh, there's a penalty at Old Trafford, Lee's little eyes were like, yes, Bruno Fernandes, surely. But no, not only was it not Bruno Fernandes, but it was taking away the Manchester United clean sheet. And I think a lot of managers that went for the likes of Harry Maguire or Dalot or Onana, because the three of them were quite popular for wildcarding players, because one particularly with Maguire is so cheap and has had attacking threat in the last few weeks. Yeah, it made so much sense to go for Maguire, particularly if you weren't going for Onana. But Bruno, I just thought, was excellent. He was top for chances created across the game week with 9. 4 of those were big chances. He had 3 attempts on goal. He put in 8 crosses. He was on set pieces, of course. He took 3 of those. He had 45 touches in the final third. Only Madueke, who you've just mentioned, and Kulusevski, who we just ranted and raved about from Spurs.
Two of our faves.
Exactly. They were the only ones that had more touches in the final third this week than Bruno Fernandes did. So it goes to show sometimes that it's worth paying that little bit extra for a player, because even when they don't get an attacking return, they still pick up a couple of bonus points because their involvement in the game is so much. And I'm not saying you should make your FPL decisions based purely on their ability to get bonus points, because clearly you make your FPL decisions based upon their opportunities for returns. But Bruno has opportunities for returns in shed loads, because obviously we have penalty responsibilities, we have set piece responsibilities, his attacking threat from open play is there as well. But the fact that he also has this underlying bonus point number, which continues to tick over really nicely, it means that he always feels like he's going to get a bonus point or two, even when the attacking return isn't there. So you get the attacking return and you almost guarantee yourself the three bonus points for Bruno. So of the two, I think Bruno is a far better, more attractive pick in my view than Anthony. Anthony just hasn't had the consistency. Yes, he played well in this one, but will he in game week 36? Will he in 37? For me, if I'm going Manchester United, and I probably will ahead of game week 37, Bruno will be one that I'll look at. The defenders, the Maguires, the Dallows will also be one I look at. And then up top, there's Hoyland as a kind of outside pick, because that third forward slot where I've currently got Mateta, maybe that's an opportunity because there's money in the bank now from selling Salah to put a little upgrade on there and have a double game week forward from Manchester United. But the double isn't particularly lovely, is it?
It's not, and Hoyland's not cheap. Garnacho is, and it's worth noting, Garnacho is a nice option in midfield for those that are looking at a fifth midfielder with not much money to spend. Perhaps, you know, Palmer and Gordon clearly better options, but Garnacho even cheaper. Bruno, yeah, even hit the post in that game. And you're right, Sam, about his creativity. For underlying BPS, he's brilliant, especially when he plays in the number 10 role. And we have seen at times this season, Bruno has had to be a little bit more restrictive and he's been a bit deeper. And Ten Hag's played him in the midfield too. That definitely restricts his bonus points potential. Now he's playing in the number 10 and he has been for a few weeks. Not only do we see the open play stuff and we're seeing goals and assists, but his underlying BPS is so much better as well. And if you're not familiar, the bonus point system, 30 plus metrics, including stuff like key passes, successful dribbles, tackles, interceptions, blocks. Bruno is a really good performer in the same way that De Bruyne is.
Yeah.
These guys, Trent, again, bonus point magnets. They don't actually have to score, get a clean sheet or an assist to register in the BPS.
Yeah,
love that. Bruno is back and he's still quite cheap. You know, I was surprised when I bought Bruno on wildcard. I was like, oh, I just expected Bruno to be around 9 million. No, he's almost a million cheaper than that. So fairly happy with Bruno at his price point. And, you know, you can't compare him like for like with a De Bruyne anymore because there's a couple of million between the two.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing that makes Bruno an attractive option is that usually by this point in the season, Bruno Fernandes would be owned by like 50, 60% of the game. We're talking about 18% ownership for Bruno. So not even 20% of the game have him. When you're talking about mini leagues, boosting your overall rank, you're looking for players who have the opportunity to do something massive for you. And those players that you want are the kind of the big game ones because, you know, the likes of Saka at 55% owned, he's not going to really make much difference to your rank regardless of what happens over the next few weeks. Same with Haaland, right, at 61%. Captaincy goes on him, suddenly your rank is not really being affected by Haaland at all. Even the same with Cole Palmer now. He was a lovely differential for me when I first brought him in. Now at nearly 50% ownership, the impact on my rank is far less than it was 2, 3, 4 months ago with him. So when you're looking at players like Bruno Fernandes, like maybe some of the Chelsea boys that you talked about before, because let's be honest, outside of Cole Palmer, nobody's very heavily owned at Chelsea. These are exactly the sort of players that we need to be looking at heading into the final few weeks of the season, because these are the ones that are going to give us some rank boosts. Even Kevin De Bruyne, he's down there at low level ownership.
Was he 15%?
15%. Yeah. So when you're talking about, you know, getting on players, you don't have to take massive risks and go for out there picks. You can go for the likes of Bruno Fernandes, Kevin De Bruyne, Kulusevski from Spurs if you want to, even Richarlison from Spurs now that he's back. These are players that you would expect to return in the final 3 weeks of the season, yet could have a absolutely huge rank gain for you if you go there as well.
Yeah, I just saw Anthony Gordon's only 19% owned.
Which is madness.
We've spoken about how good he's been. And you've been on him for some time. But still, there's so many that are fairly late to the party. Well, it's not too late. You still go buy him and there's points on the table. My big differential last week, I was super happy, Sam. You know, we both get asked on air quite often to pick a player and sell that player. Mm-hmm. So when you do it and it works, when you're on, Premier League TV or Sky Sports News and you get to big up one player that everyone's looking at going, why has he picked that player? But you're doing it because they're a differential and you like the look of them. When I went Madueke on Sky Sports News at the weekend, I could see people tweeting, what's this guy on about? 0.2% owned. Chelsea are rubbish. He's 5.3 million. Why would you pick Madueke? But recently, he has caught the eye. And if you're a Chelsea fan and you've watched him closely, you go, he's now getting game time. Or pretty much, he's nailed because of the Enzo injury. It means Gallagher plays in the midfield too. It means Palmer then plays the number 10 role. And that right-hand side of Cole Palmer is now a vacant spot. Well, Sterling hasn't exactly been covering himself in glory in recent months. And Madueke was given the chance by Poch. And yeah, Madueke is super impressive against Aston Villa. Got a goal, got an assist, got some bonus points. If you're looking to spend around 5 million in the midfield and you want someone that should play in the run-in, should play all the games in the run-in, got the double game week coming up in 37, outside of Cole Palmer, there is one or two others at Chelsea that can catch your eye, and Madueke is definitely one of them.
I must admit, when I heard you say that, I was like, right.
What is he on about?
Is this the Chelsea fan in him, or is this a genuinely good option? And I'll be honest, I mean, I'd gone for Mateta the week before and was thrilled about that one, but this one's gone just as well so far. I think for me, this game was really interesting. It was a game that I expected Aston Villa to wipe the floor with Chelsea, if I'm honest, because Aston Villa at home are so good. The first half did kind of go that way. Aston Villa were firmly on the driving seat. They just seemed to ease off. And in their easing off, which maybe coincided with Martinez going off through injury, and it's not like they had a terrible goalkeeper coming in to replace him in Olsen, because Olsen's a good goalkeeper in his own right, but there's something about losing that leadership, isn't there? Particularly when they've been without the likes of Konsa and Mings for so long this season, that when you lose that leadership from the back, you do always kind of worry about how that's going to look. And I remember saying, as watching Olsen come out, this will be really interesting for Villa now, because it'll be interesting to see how they manage to defend against a Chelsea team that we know can attack. Chelsea have got their defensive weaknesses, but going forward, they can be a good attacking unit, as they proved in this second half. And I don't know, as somebody who had not captained Cole Palmer, I watched this game and there was a moment towards the end of the game where he was through on goal and Olsen saved it. And I had my head like behind my hands thinking, this.
You knew his effective ownership was gonna get you there. It was like, at my rank, I think he was like 170% effective ownership. And he was slaloming through. He did all the hard bits and then he just fired straight at Olsen.
100%. And in my head, I was thinking, Palmer will return at Stamford Bridge because, I mean, that goes together like, I don't know, toast and jam or something, doesn't it? Palmer and Stamford Bridge returns. So in my head, I was thinking, I have to survive the Saturday evening game without Palmer returning because I know he's going to hurt me. And then I have to hope that Son gets something in the home game against Arsenal, because if that happens, I'm in the driving seat ahead of this Thursday one, and maybe they level out on Thursday night. We'll find out when we get to that one. But I don't know how he didn't return. And there were a number of moments. I thought Madueke was actually excellent. He had some moments of a bit of petulance where I was thinking, you know, the yellow cards could be a bit of an issue in the final few weeks of the season. But, you know, Chelsea did look, they looked so much better in that second half. It's just whether we can have that consistency. Now, obviously, Gusto missed out this time around. So it'd be interesting to see. I'm not expecting him to play on Thursday evening either, given what Poch said in the pre-matches, press conferences last week. But did you hold him on wildcard? Are you expecting to see him for the final weeks of the season?
Yeah, I think we'll see Gusto back. But I mean, it was a difficult decision for those that wanted to go triple Chelsea, because it was finding three good assets. And if you're looking at the back line, I mean, some went Petrovic for save points. Yeah. Gusto was clearly the best of the starting defenders for any upside. I went Mark Cucurella. I mean, I don't rate Cucurella as a player. Poch likes him. He plays him at left back. He's played 90 the last handful of games. Chilwell is out injured. And even when Chilwell is fit, I think we'll see Chilwell's appearances come on and play left wing, which we've seen in recent weeks.
Yeah.
So Cucurella, to get an own goal 4 minutes in, I was just like, oh, what a rubbish outcome. He's there purely on the chance of getting lucky for a goal or an assist. And he did actually register a few chances created, including one where he teed up Nicholas Jackson for a header from a couple of yards out, and Jackson hit the post. Now, I own both those guys. That would have been a lovely differential combination. I mean, who's cheering on a Cucurella assist Jackson goal? Well, I, biased Chelsea fan, actually was. And it is worth noting that Jackson will get his criticism, but I still think he's a good own for the run-in because he's getting minutes and chances. Now, we know he's not efficient in front of goal, but you don't always have to be. If he gets enough chances, he will score some goals. And you could argue, rather than purely poor finishing against Villa, which has been the case a lot this season for Jackson, he was actually a little bit unfortunate, hitting the post with a header. The one-on-one, which he tucked away nicely in the first half, was marginally offside and VAR rightly ruled it offside. But Jackson's getting close, and I don't think he's necessarily a bad own, despite, of course, not being a clinical finisher. But as I mentioned, I don't think he necessarily always has to be.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a... It was a difficult decision, I think, for a lot of managers on wildcard, because a lot of managers were selling Darwin Núñez, who had been struggling for returns in the weeks leading up to game week 34, and obviously wasn't consistently getting those, only to then have replaced him with Nico Jackson, who, again, felt really frustrating. Yeah, would have felt really frustrating watching him against Villa. But I think, you know, moving into the final weeks of the season, Chelsea's fixtures are nice. And so there should be plenty of opportunity for returns for the likes of Cucurella and Nico Jackson if you went there. And if you have held on to Darwin Núñez, and maybe this is a nice segue into just having a quick conversation about Liverpool, because, well, it was a very, very interesting performance, wasn't it, from Liverpool at lunchtime. No Darwin and Salah, both of them benched, which came as a massive surprise to me with Salah. I just did not see that coming, particularly after what we'd seen in the weeks leading up to that with the benching also last week in game week 34 as well. I think if you still have Liverpool assets, given it's a game, all right, it's a home game against Spurs next, and we spoke at the beginning of this pod about how from set pieces, particularly from corners, Spurs are really, really vulnerable. So Trent and Van Dijk maybe a good holds. But I think if you've got Darwin or you've got Salah, I just can't see that it's worth spending the level of money that you have to, particularly on Salah, anymore with the other options that we have in midfield, particularly with KDB going off the way that he did in this one.
Feels like it's just time to sell if you haven't already. I mean, Luis Diaz, when I look at that front three, is the one that's still getting the starts. And I thought he was the sharpest of the front three against West Ham. And Klopp clearly trusts him at the moment. You know, he sacrificed Salah and Darwin, but Diaz still got his spot. So maybe I wouldn't be selling Diaz, but Darwin, Salah, yeah, I think I would be. I mean, we saw Gakpo have 8 attempts, but this is the story of Liverpool's last couple of months. Chances galore and just not effective in front of goal. I know they registered 2, but for the amount of attempts we're seeing at Liverpool in years gone by, their conversion rate's so much higher. I mean, Robertson caught the eye again, you could argue. He had 16 crosses. He created 5 chances. He did score. But again, West Ham, if you're buying a Robertson or a Trent, it's nice to get those attacking returns, sure it is. But you need some clean sheet guarantee. And I honestly can't... When did Liverpool last keep a clean sheet? It seems like it's been forever. So there's absolutely no guarantee there. And fair play to West Ham. And Jarrod Bowen, again, continues to be an FPL asset that we overlook because he doesn't play in a side that creates a ton of chances. So his underlying numbers are never that great because West Ham aren't that attacking. But again, they don't need to be because Jarrod Bowen finds ways of getting goals, assists. And with that, bonus points. 13-point haul for Bowen at the weekend. He's produced 5 attacking returns in his last 4 starts. Brilliant asset. One note I make for next season is don't overlook Jarrod Bowen.
No. Just going back to your clean sheets for Liverpool. Last one was in game week 27. One before that was in game week 21. So they're not consistently doing it. And honestly, I think, you know, it's Spurs up next. And I'm not just my Spurs fan talking. I just don't see Spurs not scoring at Anfield. We always score on the road at Anfield. So I totally agree with what you're saying about Robbo and Trent. Both of them look like decent options, particularly against that Spurs defence. However, you can't spend that level of budget on them on the basis that you would rather spend it on the attackers, and the clean sheets just aren't there. And as for Jarrod Bowen, I've owned him for a lot of this season.
Yeah, I thought you had.
Yeah, I had him right at the start of the season and owned him for a lot. And he has been phenomenal for me this year. I took him out when he was injured a few weeks ago and just haven't been able to find a slot to bring him back in. And partly that's been because he hasn't been consistently fit. He's been kind of in and out of the team of late. Obviously, he played for them in Europe and then missed the next one. And it feels like it's been a bit of a difficult time for Jarrod Bowen through injury. But he has been so impressive over the course of the season. And for next year, he will be top of my list, or very near the top of my list, of different midfielders that I'll be looking to go to, because, you know, I think we'll all automatically go, oh, well, I'll need a Saka, and oh, maybe I need a KDB or a Foden, depending upon how you want to invest in Man City. And in the past, it would have been Mo Salah. Well, we'll see if it still is come next season. But I think for me, Jarrod Bowen will be one of those players that I'll be looking at thinking, I want him in my FPL team, because even when West Ham aren't playing great, you can nearly always rely on Jarrod Bowen.
Yeah, he always overperforms his expected as well. Like, he could score, I remember him scoring a hat trick not that long ago, and the combined XG for that hat trick was like 0.6 or something. You're like, what? How is his conversion rate so good? Really good in the air as well, worth noting, with his headed goal. Again, he scores headed goals. He's certainly, you know, not the tallest, shows you don't have to be. In terms of forwards that didn't score this weekend, Sam, we have to touch on a couple that many, like me, sold on wildcard and were praying that they didn't return because, again, the ownership's fairly high. We saw blanks, thankfully, from the likes of Solanke and Watkins. So that was a nice treat, at least.
Yeah, as a non-Solanke owner for a fair few weeks now, since my game week 30 wildcard, he has been haunting me because every time he's playing, I'm thinking he looks like he's going to get something. So I was quite relieved to see him blank. And Watkins, really, there was one moment towards the end of that game where I don't know how Watkins didn't score it, because he has been unbelievable this season. He is one of my biggest regrets, selling Watkins for Darwin a few weeks ago, because I did it for all the right reasons, all the potential upside. But these are exactly the type of players where sometimes you just have to stop and think, because the form that he's had this season, even with single game weeks, he was and continues to be a better option than some of our double game week counterparts.
Yeah, agreed. We also saw Jordan Pickford needs a shout out because he is producing points every week.
Yeah.
18 points in 34, 10 points in 35. This isn't news to us that Sean Dyche teams keep clean sheets when it matters. And we're going to the business end of the season for Everton when they really need to put in 1-0 wins. They find a way of doing so. Now, whether you're on a Branthwaite, a Tarkowski or a Pickford, these guys have been efficient sources of points. And Dyche defenders or Dyche goalkeepers, we have to remember, again, note to self for next season, they're worth investing in.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because at the beginning of last season, a lot of managers had Pickford as their goalkeeper, Pickford and Onana combination, and it didn't start particularly well. But over the course of this season, Sean Dyche has improved Everton dramatically defensively, as we would expect for one of his teams. And Pickford, look, I really hope that we see this Jordan Pickford at the Euros for England in the summer, because the last couple of weeks, I mean, he was phenomenal for me in game week 34, one of my highest scoring players. I was so thrilled with him. Had to bench him this week because I had Petrovic, who had the double, and it was a frustration. But another 10-pointer for Pickford. I just think Everton are one of those teams that also have a lovely fixture in game week 37 when everyone's bench boosting against Sheffield United, which was my reason for having Pickford in the first place. So yeah, I think shout out to Pickford. He's just been great. I'm sorry for benching you this week.
Yeah, I can't believe I've not owned him. I mean, he's by far the best performing goalkeeper of the season so far. Final note from me, Sam, is just on some of the beach teams. I don't know if on the beach is necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes on the beach means teams playing with a bit of freedom, a bit of expression, and they can go out guilt-free and just have a go. And we saw that with Bournemouth beating Brighton 3-0. You know, Bournemouth have nothing to play for. Whether or not they're on the beach, it's like, yeah, okay, I can play with a bit of expression. Crystal Palace, last few weeks, have been doing the same. Fulham Palace was 1-1 this weekend, but both teams have been playing well of late. Wolves are another one. Mid-table mediocrity, not necessarily a bad thing. They go and put a win up against Luton. I don't mind those teams that are often classified on the beach if it means they're going out there and playing with a bit of fun.
Agreed. I think there are plenty of options that you just kind of need to keep your eyes on. Like, as an 8 Nori owner, I was disappointed to see that clean sheet go quite late on because I was expecting the clean sheet there. But yes, I think you're right. I think there are teams like Wolves that you can stay invested in over the closing weeks of the season. You don't have to get off them.
Yeah, Bournemouth Palace, I'm definitely putting in that bracket too. Well, Sam, good luck for the next couple of days when you and I will both be looking at our flagged players, thinking will they, won't they, around Cher and Edison. But I expect if we're making transfers this week, it'll probably be either to roll or to make a transfer on an injured player.
Absolutely, yeah. I think for me, the plan is try and roll this week so that we have two transfers going into that all-important final double in game week 37, because I need to make sure that every single player is going to play ahead of that bench boost.
Yeah, definitely my plan too.
Cool. Right, so game week 35, as we said, is going to finish on Thursday, and then we will head straight into game week 36. The deadline for that one is going to be on Friday evening, so it's going to be a very quick turnaround for most of us. Kelly, Jules and I will be back on Thursday with the official FPL pod. We're going to be talking through our plans for game week 36 and reviewing how Kelly's wildcard went now that she's finally played it.
Oh, nice. Well, if you haven't already done so, do join the FPL pod league. The code is IB3WLK.
See you next time, everyone.
See you later.